guys, gals, and non-binary pals. Welcome to Persistent Broads, where we sound off on the news, politics, and culture affecting women across the state, country, and beyond. This is a special one-off episode. We're taking a break from our Mrs. America series talk to talk about something topical. Healthcare!
Woo!
Woo!
But actually not woo, because pandemic.
So, Lauren, how are you?
I'm good, Emily. How are you?
I'm all right. It's nice to see
like,
your face.
Yeah, good is a relative term.
It's nice to see your face.
You too, and your podcasting robe.
And yes, I'm wearing my bathrobe, which I now I guess I wear every time we record this because my basement is cold. So it's known as my podcasting robe.
That's you could move it up to like a smoking jacket as we get better at this.
I could as I get fancier. I like it. I like it. We should design Persistent Broads smoking jackets.
Yes. Or denim jackets. Also warm, but less comfy.
True. True. I like this though, but very stylish. Denim is always in.
Yes. Could put a lot of patches on it. Fun patches.
I'm into it.
But yeah, beyond that, what are we reading, watching, listening, and otherwise enjoying media-wise? I have not bought anything weird since my Nintendo Switch. Have you bought anything weird lately?
I bought Eloise a firefighter costume.
That's perfectly normal.
I did get something weird. I got the Diva Curl curly hair hairdryer, and it is a hairdryer for people with curly hair. And as I am one such person, I wanted to try it out. It will be here next week, and I'm pretty excited about it.
And it looks like a hand.
It does look like a hand. Like, it's got, like, the, yeah, the hand attachment. And it's supposed to do wonders for your hair, so I guess we'll see. I will tell the list. I'll report back to our listeners after it arrives and I've tried it.
All right.
That'd be my weird purchase. So the Diva Curl hairdryer and the firefighter costume for Eloise.
I don't know if this is weird, but I'm reading the Anne Rule book about Ted Bundy, which is The Stranger Beside Me. I am about a third of the way through and I've already learned a lot. So
is it freaking you out?
Well, yeah, but also like, it's a daylight book. Like, you don't read it when the sun goes down.
I think it would freak me out. Like, I love learning about serial killers, but there's that line, you know, where you learn and you're like, is this too much information? Like, am I going to have nightmares about this?
Yeah, the line is mostly like sunset. That's when I stop.
Sure. Makes sense.
But in reading it, I found out some very interesting info about something pertaining to Mrs. America. So stay tuned for our next episode of our Mrs. America series to learn about that fun fact that I learned.
Very nice plug.
My new hobby right now is playing Animal Crossing while I half watch Golden Girls in the background because it's just nice and calming, and also I already know what's going to happen.
I like it. This is a really excellent hobby, and I support it. My hobby is watching television with Greg while I do physical therapy exercises.
That's fun. I'm a fan of that.
My range of motion has improved by like 15 degrees. So that's
good.
I know.
Considering you have bolts and screws in your arm.
I know. It's excellent. I'm very excited about it. So hopefully I'll be knitting again before too long. I might start out small with like a washcloth. We just started watching the show Slow Burn, which we found on iTunes just totally by accident. I don't think we were looking for anything, but it just sort of popped up and it has Richard Nixon's face on it. And it's a show.
So clearly you had to watch it.
Clearly we had to check it out. And it's a show about Watergate, but from a different perspective. So the first episode was about Mrs. Mitchell. And, you know, she was the wife of the attorney general at the time, who was the head of CREEP before he resigned. He definitely knew about the break-in and just kind of...
Well, if you're going to call it CREEP, I mean, you knew what you were getting into.
You knew what you were getting into. I know. And so she was really... they interviewed Leslie Stahl from 60 Minutes, and she said that Mrs. Mitchell was the canary in the coal mine situation. She really was alerting the press and alerting the public much sooner than anyone else was, and she was silenced and told that she was crazy and all this stuff. I mean, she was pretty eccentric, but just super interesting so far. So we just started that, so that's exciting. And
if I remember correctly, didn't she called a reporter the first time to tell someone about it, and they printed it in the women's pages, which means that no one read it.
Right.
Well, I mean, yep. No one other than like women.
And she was constantly told that she was hysterical.
Ooh. I wonder if she and Nora Ephron ever met, because Nora Ephron was also like known for telling people who different parts of the Watergate, like different cast of characters in the Watergate scandal were.
I love Nora Ephron.
I'm a big fan of her too.
Fantastic writer. Very interesting lady. Really good documentary about her on HBO called Everything is Copy. I highly recommend it. I try to go for a walk every day just to walk around. I just walk around my neighborhood, and I actually see other people walking around the neighborhood during the day. So we all have the same idea. But yeah, I don't know. Like, this is just weird. This is a weird, weird time. And I know people are getting restless, but I just want to tell people to hang in there, you know? Of course, I can say that because I've been social distancing for quite some time. Because I broke my arm and I couldn't go anywhere. So for several weeks. So, you know, I mean, you kind of get used to it after a while, like make sure that you're well stocked. But I think the way to get through this right now is to do something that you've been wanting to do that you just haven't had the chance to do yet. So maybe it's a series on Netflix, or, you know, maybe you want to watch all of the Harry Potter movies. I've seen them.
Try gardening.
I've seen them a dozen times. I'll watch them again. Sure. Try gardening. Maybe there's a book you want to read. I have a whole stack of books that I want to get through. So, you know,
buy
think
a box
of things like
dye
that.
And cover your roots so you don't complain about them anymore.
Indeed. Yeah, I don't care about my roots. They are brown like the rest of my hair.
In the grand scheme of things, your roots are not the big picture here.
It's true. It's true. And you can tell people are starting to get antsy because people are sharing some pretty crazy shit on Facebook and Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
There isn't enough tinfoil in the world for all of these tinfoil hat wearers. So, and the other thing is we continue to follow the adventures of Wellington the Penguin and his penguin friends. Wellington has been very active at the Shedd Aquarium. He's been seeing all of the exhibits. Very excited for Wellington.
Mayor Lori Lightfoot got to go visit him, and she also fed some sharks.
That video was brilliant. More videos with Lori Lightfoot. She is
and
so
penguins.
Interesting and delightful, and penguins, because there should be penguins in every video. If we had the ability to work with penguins, we would put them on this podcast. But I don't have any. We read Tango Makes Three to Eloise tonight. Have you heard that story?
No, I have not.
It is about the two gay penguins at the Central Park Zoo.
Yay!
That raise a baby penguin. And it's a really sweet children's book. But it's also about penguins. So penguins have really been a big part of my life, it seems like, the last couple. I've learned more about penguins in the last few weeks than I have in my 35 years on this planet.
So one of the reasons that we wanted to do this episode is because this Saturday is a very special anniversary. It is the 60-year anniversary of the FDA authorizing the quote-unquote the pill or oral contraceptives. So that was in 1960. I did the math and checked that. And one of the interesting things about the kind of history of the pill is, I mean, you get all this interesting stuff about women smuggling contraception in from other countries, sewn into the linings of their coats. I think that's Catherine McCormick is one of the women that did that, and she is a cool lady that we may have to do an episode on at some
point. Absolutely.
Maybe we'll do a whole birth control episode because the history of it is a wild ride. But so 5 years after the FDA first authorized the pill, the Griswold decision came down, which said that it was basically legal to distribute and give the pill to married couples, which meant you had to prove that you were married and had your husband's permission. And so it was not available to unmarried women. because what if they used it? What would we be?
You can't have a bunch of sluts and whores walking around.
No, we can't have that.
Can't have that.
So about 7 years after the Griswold decision, unmarried women were finally allowed to access contraception in the Eisenstadt versus Baird case. And I mean, I'm kind of getting into like a little history lesson now, but the Affordable Care Act made contraception available for free, which was likely a huge factor in the dramatic drop in teen pregnancy we've seen in the past decade. Like, I remember, I think this was in 2010, right kind of before all of this got phased in, there was a show on TV, and this was in like the big burst of like teen pregnancy content that happened at the time, and there was a show called The Secret Life of the American Teenager, and it was a trip.
I've seen it. I wasn't even their target audience, but I definitely sat through the first season of that.
Ooh. It was something. Yeah. So basically the first season happened and it was in the midst of like this basically like fright about teen moms, not teen parents writ large, just teen moms, because these teenage girls getting themselves pregnant, self-replicating right. teenage girls.
Right.
And I remember, like, I didn't watch it that much after that. But, I mean, by the time even, like, that show had 3 seasons, the teen birth rate had dropped, like, precipitously. I feel like by the end of it, they were just like, well, this isn't a problem anymore, so we don't have a show anymore after this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
You killed Secret Life of the American Teenager.
Yikes. That show was just
a terrible show.
Woo, it was so bad. It was just bad, and I'm embarrassed to say that I watched. I watched the first season, and then I just sort of like would occasionally watch an episode here or there just to see what was happening, but
it didn't make any sense. It was very soapy.
It was a soap opera for teenagers.
I was definitely there key audience, and even I was like, this is too much, guys. This is very dramatic.
It's funny because when I was a teenager, I was watching stuff like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Very nice.
You know, you missed out, Lauren.
I mean, I like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know,
it's available now.
That's true. And the Gilmore Girls.
Yes, Gilmore Girls was a big part.
That's a much better show regarding teen pregnancy.
Yeah, much
Secret
better.
Life of the American Teenager. I actually thought Secret Life of the American Teenager would be more like the Gilmore Girls. It was not, though.
No, it was.
It was bad. It was very, very bad.
It was very good that the Affordable Care Act came along and killed that off.
Right. So, yes, the Affordable Care Act, huge factor in a drop in teen pregnancy. And making it the Affordable Care Act also insisted that employers cover birth control.
Which is a fight we're still having right now.
Which is a fight we're still having. In fact, it's a fight that was argued in front of the Supreme Court this week.
And or Ruth Bader last Ginsburg.
Week, by the time you, the time you hear this.
And Ruth Bader RBG, Ginsburg is in her hospital bed fighting for your rights.
She is. And there's no one I trust more than RBG to do that. But, you know, employer health insurance, it should cover birth control. It should cover anything that a doctor says that you need, from having your appendix taken out to ED medication to birth control.
And maternity care, because that sometimes is not.
What?
Yeah, was previously not always included.
What?
That was kind of Rod Blum's downfall when he was like, you don't need maternity care.
Well, I mean, this just kind of goes to show the theme of this episode, which is really just about how women have, you know, to put it bluntly, women have been treated like shit by our healthcare system for a long, long time. They Yes. have been discarded and disregarded and disrespected for many, many years. And, you know, it's all part of the patriarchy's ability to attempt to put women in their place. And this is just another way to do it, you know, not allowing single women to have access to birth control to determine their own bodies because, you know, men aren't going to marry you if you're a slutty whore, that sort of thing. However, you know, men are allowed to run around and do whatever they want.
Speaking of like how basically women have been treated extra poorly by the medical establishment. Like, women of color have also had a real rough time, like, in being experimented on in the case of, like, the quote-unquote father of gynecology basically practiced all of his procedures on enslaved people, which is not cool. And it's something that I think the medical field needs to reckon with and kind of think about who they're holding up as heroes. But also, I mean, there were multiple versions of forced sterilization among, like, Native populations and Black women populations, which is far and away some of the scariest things that, like, that have ever happened. I mean, I think one of the things about reproductive justice that's really important to me is that you get to decide how, when, with who, and if you want to be a parent. And that includes having, like, the opportunity to have a child. I guess in continuing with this theme of women being discarded or not believed by the medical establishment, women's pain is very often, very, very often discounted or just downplayed, and or you're told that it's mental and it's something that is not actually, like, a functional piece of, like, your body needs to work.
Well, and I think that you know, through the centuries, women have often been undertreated or just disregarded. You know, back during the Victorian era, hysteria was a big thing. So, you know, pretty much anything that was wrong with a woman, it was hysteria or, you know, had something to do with your menstrual cycle.
If I remember correctly, one of the, like, ancient philosophers thought that your uterus just, like, bopped around your body, and that when you were acting...
That is exactly what happened.
If you were acting untoward, it was because your uterus had, like, worked its way up to your brain.
That is exactly right.
That's what happens. I mean,
that's totally what happens. Every, like, 28 days or so, that's
what
happens.
It just jumps right up over, yep,
it's
right
not
over
my
everything.
Fault. It's not my fault.
It's just hanging on, like, a pendulum.
Everything makes sense now, Lauren. The uterine pendulum. You heard it here first on Persistent Broads.
Uterine pendulum.
But, you know, actually, there have been studies done about the medical establishment just over the last 20 years about how the medical establishment has treated women. And there is certainly a gender bias in healthcare. When it comes to women, there's a very famous study called The Girl Who Cried Pain that was done in the late 90s. And essentially, women who have pain versus men who have the same pain, men are treated, whereas women are either ignored or undertreated. And this is even worse for women of color. So, you know, women of color, we can't state this enough in this episode. Women of color certainly hurt more from these circumstances than white women do, to be sure. This is certainly something that I am personally invested in. I have chronic pain due to several different conditions. One of those conditions is fibromyalgia. And fibromyalgia, for many, many years, was considered to just be a mental dysfunction. You know, your whole body hurts. A lot of women were treated like they were crazy. A lot of women were treated for various mental disorders and expected to get better. Or they were told it's all in your head, or, you know, you're just depressed, or you should go for a walk, or that kind of thing. Fibromyalgia didn't become a legitimate diagnosis until the 1980s. Which is mind-blowing. So, and it's very common. About 5 million people, 5 million Americans have fibromyalgia. 50 million Americans have chronic pain. So chronic pain is pain that lasts for 3 months or more. So it's pain that persists. It doesn't go away. I've had chronic pain pretty much since I was 10. It has gotten much, much worse to the point now where it's severe chronic pain for me, whereas when I was growing up, it wasn't. It was just annoying and limiting. But I've been disregarded by doctors lots of times. I had a doctor, I was having a lot of pain where I have some arthritis in my left hip joint, and my dad took me to see an orthopedic surgeon, and he yelled at me in front of my dad and was like, I don't even know why you're here. He actually said, I don't even know why you're here.
That's some incredible bedside manner.
And I left, and I did not see another orthopedic surgeon until I broke my arm in February. So it's been a good, 17 years, I guess, since that happened. So it's pretty crazy. And then even recently with breaking my arm, it wasn't healing as quickly as it normally would. I've still been having some pretty intense nerve pain as those nerves regenerate, and just completely dismissed by some of the healthcare professionals I've talked to, not all of them. I've worked really, really hard to establish a really good team when it comes to pain management, because I think that's something that everybody needs. If you live in pain, you have to create a really good team of medical professionals around you, people who will go to bat for you and work with you and work with your insurance company to make sure that you're getting what you need. But, a lot of these chronic pain disorders are autoimmune diseases, things like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, osteoarthritis. Osteoarthritis isn't an autoimmune disease, but, fibromyalgia has some of the characteristics of an autoimmune disease. A lot of the autoimmune diseases that cause chronic pain and chronic symptoms occur more often than not in women. And so a lot of pain treatments have not been designed for women. They're designed for men. I know. So they are tested on, men, and they're not tested on women. And then they wonder why women don't get the same results as men do. When women, we have completely different bodies. Our bodies are able to grow, sustain life, give birth to that life, feed that life for many, many months on end. Our bodies are different. And so they're often discounted by that. And so there's just a fact that, Americans take the pain of girls less seriously than boys. And there's actually a Washington Post piece that we will link to in the show notes about that. But this is something that it has been done, a study that's been done both with adults and some observational studies that have been done with children. But pain is just treated differently in women than it is in men. And I'm not entirely sure why. I don't think that a lot of doctors or medical professionals set out to be that way. Well, I think there's an institutional gender bias.
Definitely. And I took anatomy in high school and college, and we learned from the male body as default. So I've learned all about anatomy when it comes to the quote unquote default male body. And there was a Twitter post like a couple months ago that showed a diagram of what the female mammary ducts like system looks like. It looks like a flower, and I had never seen that before. And it was so incredible that like I didn't know what was even happening in my own body. And
yeah, I didn't see that until I was pregnant.
Yeah, and it was beautiful to see and to understand like that's part of like me, but it was also like, oh, I am almost 26 and I have never ever encountered a diagram of like what I'm working with here. And right. That's terrifying. And it, like you said, it's institutional, it's systemic. It's because we're not teaching or studying or seeking out treatments for these things. Like even heart attack symptoms are taken less seriously in women because they don't present the same way that men's symptoms
do. Heart disease is the number one killer of women in this country. It's something that we need to be aware of, especially persistent broads like ourselves. We need to be aware that this is something that exists. We need to be able to call professionals out when we see it, and demand more, demand better. Something that I often tell folks is that when it comes to advocating for yourself and your healthcare, no one knows your body better than you do. Even your doctor, And, you know, medical professionals, they do want to take care of you. They want to do their best. And so you've got to give them all the information, but you also have to ask questions and make sure that you're getting the information that you need.
I think another thing that's going to help, especially with the more systemic bits, is representation, not just among the medical field, in all sectors of the medical field, but in government. Like Representative Abby Finkenauer was the first woman to admit that she had endometriosis on the floor of the House, and it is 2020. And she put out the call for more funding for treatments and looking for a cure for endometriosis. And I am blanking on the statistic right now, but a lot of women deal with endometriosis or similar conditions.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, similar conditions. Yeah.
It was incredible to see her stand up there and talk about it and be like, oh, I have that too. And yeah, there are a lot of women. It's one of the most common chronic conditions that women experience.
But the most difficult to diagnose, because there's not a lot of institutional knowledge about it. And it's so important that we have those fighters for us, like Abby, who are going to talk about that. I mean, it shouldn't have to be like, I have it, so it's important. But like, it definitely helps right now when you have someone who's like, I deal with this. We need to do more.
Well, and I think that a lot of conditions that women deal with, and a lot of situations that women deal with, you know, this isn't just with medical conditions, but with mental health issues, things like postpartum depression. You know, a lot of these things that women deal with, they are dealt with silently, because representation has never experienced them, therefore has no frame of reference in which to talk about it. So, you know, they could maybe see a statistic flash across their desk saying, you know, X number of women have endometriosis, just as an example, but they don't really understand what it is, what it feels like, how debilitating it can be. Therefore, they're not necessarily going to put a lot of thought into it, whereas a woman is going to know what that is, because women talk. And we certainly understand what is going on in our bodies. And so, the solution, as always, here on Persistent Broads, is to elect more women and put more women into leadership positions.
Yes. And one of the things you were saying a little bit earlier about no one knows your body better than you do, being gaslit and not being listened to has had harmful to fatal consequences for a lot of women. Like Serena Williams, who is like basically Superwoman, was not believed, and we could have lost one of the most insanely talented athletes on this planet because someone didn't believe her when she said that something was wrong, which is, I've said bananas 8,000 times today, but is bananas.
It is B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I can't hear anyone say bananas without spelling it in my head.
Cut for a hollaback girl break.
Thanks, Gwen Stefani. Thank you. Thank you. I ain't no hollaback girl.
You're a hollyback girl.
Oh my God.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Lauren. Thank you. That's helpful. So what would a better healthcare future for women look like? I think there's so many things. I think having clinics and hospitals more welcoming to women, I think would be huge. You know, I was thinking about this. So I'm in physical therapy 3 times a week for my arm. And there is a mom who has to bring her two boys, who are certainly elementary school age, so maybe like between the ages of like 6 and 8. So they are not old enough to stay at home by themselves. Daycare, they probably don't have access to daycare. Public schools are closed right now, obviously, because of the virus. And so this woman who looks like she has a knee injury, I think she had knee surgery. So she has to be at physical therapy. She has to take her kids with her. And so creating environments that are very kid-friendly and kid-accepting for women who are in these scenarios, and men who are in these scenarios too, parents. But oftentimes it really is women. Like the burden is on women when things like schools close. A lot of times the burden is placed on women.
It's all connected.
It is all connected. But, you know, I mean, just making places that are more kid-friendly, I think, too. Making clinics easier for women to access because they'll have to bring their kids with them so that they're getting more checkups. So that they're going in for their annual exams, that kind of thing. Just making it easier on women. Because women right now are expected to do so much. You know, we are expected to hold down a job. We're expected to keep things together at home. We're expected to take care of the children and make sure that they are getting their education, make sure that they are healthy, make sure that, I don't know, that they're still alive, like plants, you know? Well, it's true. You got to check on them every now and then, make sure they're still alive.
I'd like to point out that the orchid that you guys got me when you broke your arm is still,
oh my God, orchid update.
Is still alive.
Yes.
I don't know how, but it is. I've watered
it. Sometimes it comes down to will.
It has
Lauren.
A strong will. I think it's going to make it.
So orchid update. The orchid is doing well. Excellent. We will post a photo of the orchid in the show notes.
Or on Instagram.
Everyone can see. Or on Instagram. Yes, follow us on Instagram. So, Lauren, what do you think would be good for to make healthcare better for women?
I mean, as a designer, I am always a fan of making things more efficient and not only efficient, but woman friendly.
So more pink things then?
Yes, more needles for her.
Because obviously if it's pink,
test tubes
it's
for her.
For a woman.
It's
yes.
Pink for a woman. No, but there was a firm that did a redesign of the speculum, which if you don't know what a speculum is, congratulations on not having a vagina. because it's not fun, but for a lot of women and people who have vaginas, who need pap smears and IUDs and things like that, that thing hasn't been revamped in almost 200 years. And so this firm set out to change that, which also I should point out that the guy who designed the speculum was the one who was experimenting on enslaved women. So maybe we shouldn't go with what he said.
Maybe not using his invention anymore would be a good thing.
Just a thought. But so there was a design firm that wanted to look into how to make it more comfortable, how to make it easier for providers to use. One of the main concerns that people have is that they're cold or that they're metal and that they have screws in them that hurt and that we shouldn't perhaps be using metal things. And so one of the things that they came up with was a plastic one that had lights on it to make it easier for visualizing. But it's an incredible study that they did. And one of the things that they even talked about was that they wanted to silence the ratcheting noise that happens when you open it up, because a lot of people clench
That's
up.
That's sometimes the worst part, to be honest, is the ratcheting sound.
Yeah, and it's a very scary clicking noise that's not...
right after that sound happens, you hear, oh, just relax.
Yeah, because you don't want to... No one wants to go in for a pap smear and, like... You need to make it as nice as you can. And also, it doesn't help.
We've finally done it. In 11 episodes of Persistent Bras, we're finally talking about vaginas and pap smears. Thank you, listeners. Thank you.
But one of the other things that they talked about...
Sorry, Greg.
One of the other things that they investigated was how... I mean, even just sort of the position and the environment that you're in can also have an effect on your experience. So, like, you're sitting on... paper, which is very sanitary, but not known for its comfort level. And you're
crinkly. It moves around.
It's crinkly. It's uncomfortable. And you're always afraid that you're going to tear it and that something's going to go wrong.
I do always tear it. Fun fact. I just do. It always happens.
And like, rather than giving them like a blanket or something to put over their legs or something. It's usually like another sheet of paper.
But like thicker paper.
But thicker paper,
pink.
Yes.
And pink. It's pink. It's like a puce pink.
Well, clearly they're doing just great with the woman-friendly things. Yes. So, I mean, not only like tools, but just kind of rethinking how we are approaching these treatments. And I mean, even from just like a strict science-based perspective, like, are we giving people what they need when they come in? Are they presenting with different symptoms based on how their body works? Like, I might be misremembering this, but like, I remember learning in the jump rope for heart thing that when you have a heart attack, your left arm goes numb and your heart starts to hurt and feels like someone is like sitting on your chest. It has been a long time since I was in jump rope for heart. So if any of that was wrong, feel free to write in and tell me what that actually is. But there is anecdotal evidence and probably actual scientific evidence that women experiencing heart attacks, it feels more like heartburn, which is more easily disregarded. And you might just be told to like go home and take some Tums, which is not how you should approach having a heart attack.
True.
So I think
Tums will not cure a heart attack.
We would like to take a firm stance on that. But yeah, I think just ensuring that we're doing more research and there's more funding going into like figuring out what the difference is between how people are presenting these symptoms is between, I mean, all the genders. It's gender is a spectrum and gender is a construct.
Absolutely.
And I mean, along with that, it's expanding trans women's and LGBTQ populations' access to healthcare, because they often face a double barrier in that people
Absolutely.
Are, I mean, even just like the paperwork, it can be enough of a, like, enough to make you feel uncomfortable to leave because like they don't have your gender on the list. And then you're like, well, do I have to pick one? And it gets, I can't imagine how frustrating it must be, but thankfully there are clinics like the Iowa City LGBTQ clinic, but we need more of those. And
right.
We need much
Can't
more of
those.
You
just have one clinic in a state of 3 million people.
No.
That's not enough. That's not acceptable. And we can do better and we should do better.
Yes. We must do better for... Because what's the Paul Wellstone? We all do better when we all do better.
It's true. Yes. Well, Sheila Wellstone was absolutely a persistent broad.
I bet she was.
We can do an episode on her. She was amazing. But... Another thing would definitely be more research and funding for reproductive conditions like endometriosis and polycystic ovarian syndrome. Both are very common but very difficult to diagnose and have a wide range of symptoms and a wide range of degrees. You know, I have endometriosis, but I'm fortunate enough that when I had surgery for it a little over a year before I had my daughter, it was just a stage one. So, you know. Not that severe enough to cause a lot of pain and discomfort, but not nearly as severe as it could be. So I was very lucky in that regard. But, you know, there's no diagnostic way. There's no way to diagnose endometriosis without surgery.
Yeah.
So anytime, you know, if you say you've had endometriosis for sure, then you've had surgery. Otherwise, it's just suspected. And when things are suspected, you know, you try lots of things, you don't have a definitive answer, and that's really frustrating, and there's only so many options that you have. And it's the same thing with PCOS and all of the symptoms that has carries. And so, you know, it's not just about making it difficult to get pregnant, although that's one of the larger symptoms, but it's also about, you know, hormonal imbalance. It's about pain.
Yeah,
and discomfort and all of those things are really important, because I can tell you, as someone who lives in pain every day, if you don't have to be in pain, you shouldn't be in pain. It's not a great way to live.
No, I have polycystic ovarian syndrome, and getting diagnosed with it was a roller coaster ride that required a lot of blood work, a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of invasive ultrasounds that...
And you probably had symptoms for a while, yeah, too.
Also,
it was... even diagnosed.
It was the kind of invasive ultrasound that Republicans want to make everyone who is pregnant have, which are not fun.
Well, and I think that the other thing, too, is really empowering women to know about their own bodies. And I mean, this is good for everybody. This is good for every single person to be empowered about their own body. Know how your body works. After you have your first period, or after your daughter has her first period, make sure she goes to see a gynecologist and starts that annual exam routine to make sure that everything's getting checked, because you can start showing symptoms for a lot of these things in high school. And then if you're being treated for that early on, your 20s and 30s are going to go a lot easier, and it's going to be a lot better. But I really think that just making sure that women understand how their bodies work, and not just, not just the stuff you learn in like sixth grade about women's periods and stuff, but really
you watch that movie from the 80s.
Oh yeah. We all watched that movie. I watched a movie, no joke, where a girl spends the night at another girl's house and she gets her period. And so like the girl's, the girl's mom helps her out and gives her a pad. And then the next morning is explaining what happened by making like a uterus and fallopian tubes out of pancake batter.
I did not get to watch this movie, and
it was seriously impressive.
I'm very upset that we watched a different one.
I'm so sorry. I'll try to find it on YouTube and send it to you, Lauren.
Yeah, ours was
like... You'll love it in your isolation. But, just making sure that women have education beyond that, because it's a hell of a lot more than your period. And your period can be a lot more complicated than what you're told.
I think also a lot of women's health is couched in these kind of euphemistic terms, or like shrouded in mystery, like periods are supposed to... And I mean, periods could be their own episode, and I'm sure we will do one because I have a lot to say about periods, but like...
I mean, I feel like every so often we should probably do a period and or vagina episode.
Yes.
Just, just because that's what women talk about.
Yes, right? Always.
Just talk about our periods and vaginas. Yes. So every so often.
But like... And I'm not taking polls on this, but like, I feel like periods are still seen as like pretty shameful. Like people are not out and proud about their period. Like people are still like shoving tampons into their like pockets before they walk to the bathroom because they don't want people to see, when it's literally like this happens every month to half the population. And right. We've all somehow decided... Not we. Someone else has decided this. Probably men has decided that, it's shameful. It's the curse. Is that menopause? No, that's the change of life. Just kidding.
True.
No, but that like taking the stigma away from a lot of these things that just happen is a like... the stigma associated with like childbirth and like what your body looks like afterward, and people expecting you to just like look the same way that you were afterward is nuts, because it's not like you like spring back into your old form. You're not a Pokemon.
Yeah, that definitely did not happen to me.
You're not a Pokemon?
I'm not. I wish I were.
But yeah,
I would be excellent at it.
So taking the mysteriousness away from things that happen every day is a huge thing. And also, I mean, I spoke about like childbirth and everything, despite never having gone through it. But redefining like women's health as more than maternity care, because like women are not just people when they step into the delivery room. They are people throughout their entire
lives.
We're not
just a vessel.
No, we're not.
We're not just vessels.
No, that's The Handmaid's Tale. And I mean, that gets closer every day, but.
It's true. And then, the last thing is obviously implicit bias training, making sure that that those studying to become healthcare providers are aware of the gender bias in healthcare, because I think awareness is a huge part of conquering it and changing that, because if you know something exists, you're certainly going to be much more likely to catch yourself if you're doing it. So I think implicit bias training is going to be another huge, huge part of that. So we have a list for all of our healthcare providers. If there is anything that we left off of that list in terms of what would make healthcare better for women, please let us know, because I imagine this is going to be a topic that we will revisit from time to time, because there's a lot within this topic to talk about. So, and not just periods and vaginas, although
it's not all speculums.
It's not all speculums. Oh my God.
I was going to say, could that be the episode title?
It might be. That might have to be the episode title. All right. So the state of the ladies, where are we at, Lauren?
The Mad Men gif of the guy saying, not great, Bob. Our right to birth control is up for debate in the Supreme Court right now. And a lot of women are taking on a lot of extra labor right now, while their male partners think that they are also taking on division of labor, guys. We'll do a whole episode on that another time.
That is definitely an episode in and of itself, but it's certainly an issue. Women are going through a lot right now, and we need to be aware of that.
Be nice to everybody in your life.
True that. But especially folks who are working hard, and certainly reach out to people, even if it's just sending a text or reaching out on Facebook and just being like, hey, how's it going? Especially to folks who have multiple children who are at home right now, because that is hard for one and all.
Shout out to my mom, who has my brother and sister at home right now.
Right, but they can, like, feed themselves.
Well.
Theoretically. Maybe they can't. I don't know what goes on in the Uncle Neil household, but, you know. I feel like your mom's got everybody whipped into shape. Hey, Chris. Shout out to you. Thanks for listening. And remember, it's hard out here for a broad.
Persistent Broads is part of the Potluck Media Network and would not be possible without grassroots supporters like you. We are recorded, mixed, and edited by Greg Kallenstein. For more information, visit potluck.fm or find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks for listening.